Brady stands in the pocket, fires it to the right, down the right sideline, and caught at the 20-15, 10-5, touchdown, Patriots. Tom Brady, Randy Moss, and they each have set NFL records on the go-ahead touchdown. For Randy Moss, touchdown reception number 23. For Tom Brady, touchdown pass number 50, an NFL record.
This is Bigger Than the Game with Jeremy Dove and Jose Ruiz.
Welcome to Bigger Than the Game with Jeremy and Jose. I'm Jeremy Dove. I'm joined by the man, the myth, the legend, my co-host, my tag team partner, also known as JR12, the one and only Jose Ruiz. What's going on?
What's going on, Jeremy? How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm tired. It's been a long week and a half, bro. How about you?
Same, you know, but I guess what helps pick me up is always doing this show. And I think especially when, you know, the sports gods are in our favor and they give us something that really is just a layup for two sports historians like ourselves. And last week it was all Brady Belichick hype,
right?
Getting you ready for that Sunday night game, Tampa at New England, Tom Brady coming home. And I'm not going to lie, because I love history, I'm always like, man, everyone just gets hype. Everyone's just all over the place. You know, they want to overhype everything. But I don't know how you felt. Last week, the game was whatever, but I was into the hype all week because just so much was happening. People were talking about legacies and who's it mean more for. Like, the whole week was like really looking forward to just hearing the hype and people talking about this. I don't know how you felt.
Yeah, I felt the same way, man. Like, I was all in it, you know, because the hype was deserved, right? Because there's a lot of sporting events that people hype up. Well, not really sporting events, just regular season games that people hype up and, you know, it doesn't really live up to it. But this one, it deserved it all. You know, you got, you know, Brady. Obviously, we all know what, you know, he did in New England. And you have, obviously, Bill Belichick still there. You know, defensive genius. We'll definitely get into those two dynamics. But, yeah, that hype was deservingly so. And it was a great game. It was a good game. It was a really good game. So, no, I was excited for that game, too, though.
Yeah, and it's weird because the game kind of was. It was weird because, like, on paper, I'm like, this shouldn't be a good game, but because...
Right, I thought it was going to be a blowout.
Yeah, the two main guys we're looking at, player and a coach, and they know each other so well, I'm like, this will be a good game, or at least a close game, because they just... It's just one of those things, when you know someone so well, it's hard, no matter how great you are, it's hard to get away from that, and that's what kind of had me intrigued, where I'm like... Belichick could pull this off, or I'm like, or, you know, Brady could do it. Like, it's all just back and forth, but I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, and I couldn't wait to see it because of that matchup. And, you know, it was a lot of stuff I saw on social media, I seen on TV how, you know, I don't know how long this narrative has been, you know, gaining some traction, but I heard a lot of, like, Belichick needs Brady, right, to be great, and I can disagree 100% with that. You know what I mean? Like, and we'll definitely, you know, talk about that. But that was that really got me going for this game, because I know how you feel about Bill Belichick. You know how I feel about Bill Belichick, and, you know, all the Spygate and all that aside, right? He's an amazing defensive coach, right? Like, he's one of the top defensive coaches of all time, and I just couldn't wait to see what he was going to draw up to go against that. To go against Brady and that offense, that Tampa Bay, that Bucs offense is a great offense, and, you know, he did not disappoint, for sure.
Well, that's the thing, you know, I was looking at it as this dynasty that we saw the past 19, 20 years with these two guys is something that you won't see again, I think, in our lifetime in pro sports, just with the way the sports is set up now, and... You know, especially looking at the player, Tom Brady's name is synonymous with winning. It's up there when you think of Jordan, when you think of Bill Russell, you know, your Vince Lombardi, those kind of people, you're thinking Tom Brady, he's gone into that, like, pantheon, which is unbelievable. And we got to see it these past 20 years. But there's nothing, and that's why it was fun, because no matter how you feel about the Patriots, and they were around for so long that there's so, like, there's just different squads and different eras.
Yeah.
Yeah, the constant was Brady and Belichick, but the teams were so different in those 20 years. You have to acknowledge, and that's what we love to do, is looking at this is history that we will never see again. And what we saw these past, and you have to give credit to it, because for you know you won't see a player, a quarterback, and a coach stick together that long, in my opinion.
No.
So even if you have a coach who's 20 years and wins 6 Super Bowls, you're not going to see that same quarterback being the guy for all 6. You'll see probably a variation of them, but you're not going to see that same QB coach combo. And, you know, to what you said about, and you're right, Belichick's one of the great defensive coaches of all time. You know, you can listen to what we talked about, Super Bowl 25, check our archives.
Check them.
You know, how we Belichick gave that great game plan that's in the Hall of Fame, that game plan. But same with Peyton Manning and Tony Dungy, and Belichick and Brady had it, that them being defensive coaches made these all-time great quarterbacks better. And that, you know, Belichick was, especially when Brady came in, because Brady's quarterback coach passed away suddenly in 2001. So then Belichick became the quarterback coach. He coached Brady. And, you know, for those, you know, we talked about it a couple weeks ago with a football life and Belichick, you saw Tom sitting down. It was those two sitting down going over the game plan and Belichick showing Brady what to look for in these opposing defenses and what to be prepared for when you're playing the Ravens and what Ray Lewis and Ed Reed do, or you're playing against the Steelers and Polamalu. So I was with you where it was frustrating to see that narrative being like, is Belichick now, we give him too much praise, and does he deserve this praise without Brady, and he can't do anything without Brady? It was very frustrating to see.
Yeah, totally, totally. And what if you have a quarterback's coach, what other coach would you want, right? Then one of the best, again, one of the best defensive minds teaching you what not to do and what to look for. Like, that just, to me, again, that just explains a lot, especially early on, right? And then I know we were talking about, you know, Brady and Belichick, but we also talked about, you know, off air about, you know, like Brady breaking Drew Brees' record. That also started this conversation as well. So it was so much Brady stuff going on these past couple of weeks that it was just, you know. And you know what we do here, right? What we do here in Bigger Than the Game, we talk about legacies, we talk about greatness, we break it down, and if it's like rightfully, you know, if it's rightfully so or not, and definitely this doesn't need that breakdown, right? Because everybody knows how great both of these men are, but you know, we definitely want to look into, again, we talked about the Brees record, we talked about like just Brady's great years, but also these Super Bowl teams and another team that, you know, we definitely want to talk about that didn't win the Super Bowl. And that 07 team, I can't wait to talk about that.
Oh, for sure, because that's where a lot of the debate comes, because, like, you know, you have a 20-year run and 6 titles, and a lot of people, their most memorable team, maybe the most dominant team, some say their best team, and we'll get into that, is a year that they didn't win the championship. But it was a historical one, and maybe probably the most memorable one, I think, of this century, the most memorable football team we've had, were the 07 Patriots. So that's why it's you know, going to be fun to get into that a little bit later. But I'm looking also, you know, to me, Jose, it's really interesting. I think a big reason why, me personally, I was really into all the hype last week is because Brady and Belichick both, they have a weird relationship with history. And what I mean history is both guys, you know, they were both close to the late, great Steve Sable, founder of NFL Films. And they both do things like, you know, Brady did the Brady 6, where he sat down with Steve Sable. Steve Sable, I think his last really, like, interview he did. And Brady talked about the 6 quarterbacks taken ahead of him, and he gets emotional.
That was a great...
That was awesome.
That great interview, yeah.
You know, and then Belichick's the first one to do a football life. He let NFL Films follow him for the whole season. You know, he gets emotional talking, you know, reliving his Giant Stadium days when he's the D coordinator for the Giants and stuff. Belichick had the late great writer David Halberstam write a book about him. So, you know, hey, to me also, Belichick doing the NFL 100.
Yeah.
Which he was great at.
He was awesome.
Yeah, you know, surprising. I knew he loved, you know, football history, but, you know, we can speak to it. It's not just knowing the knowledge, it's how you present it. And he was great with Rich Eisen and Collinsworth, and he was connected, that's what was impressed me, to so much of football history between his dad and him.
Yeah.
Like, most of the history of the NFL, Belichick is, like, connected with it. So,
and he definitely showed that.
He showed his knowledge. It was unbelievable. Yeah. And so, to me, it's like, but they're also some of the most private people. So, that's why it was fascinating to get, like, they know, like, hey, our legacies matter, and being able to show our greatness and, like, you know, giving fans and the people access, leaving that behind for fans, for family. That's important, but they're so private, I think, and that's what kind of made it fun as well, to kind of like look and starting to hear people talk more and more about what really went on between these two guys for all those years.
Right. I mean, a 20-year relationship is a long time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, again, another narrative is these guys don't really like each other, things like that. Like, for me, you can't have a relationship for that long and not develop some type of love for each other. I don't care if it's sports or not. You know, like, you're spending all those hours, and it's a lot of hours. You know what I mean? And you're spending all that time. You're going through all that stuff they went through, all those wins, all those great games, all those championships. You cannot tell me they don't have a great relationship. I don't want to. You know, I could be totally wrong. I don't know. But, I mean, it may be different today because, again, like when you leave a team, I guess that happens. But, I mean, this was like a perfect marriage, right? It was like these guys are loyal. These guys are intense. You know, they were brilliant. Like, it was just everything. And you talked about it earlier. Like, this would never happen again. Like, this combination of greatness, we would never see again. We saw it with, you know, Bill Walsh in Montana. We saw it with a couple other people. But this here, man, for the longevity of it, man, like it was, and I took it for granted, right? Like, because again, we hear about the evil empire, and, you know, we know here in Philly, we played them twice in the Super Bowl. So, but even watching them from afar and all this stuff, again, like the Spygate, the Flategate, all that stuff, I knew, man, this team is one of a kind. I'm never going to see this again.
Well, and I think that, you know, like you said, that relationship's gotten, and the thing is, I go back and forth because, you know, obviously Belichick has been to himself. He's been quiet. But the Brady camp, not Tom Brady, but you had his dad,
yeah,
Alex Guerrero, who we know, you know, people don't know that Belichick Guerrero, you know, Belichick banned him from the building and didn't. And that was part of like the rift at the end of the relationship.
That was the first time you really heard.
Yeah. And, you know, now Guerrero has his own office in Tampa, got a Super Bowl ring,
yeah,
you know, last year. So it's very different. And they threw shots at Belichick, you know, Tom Sr., Daddy Brady,
yeah,
he went right there at it, and he didn't mix any words, and you knew where he was coming from, that there still seems to be some venom from the Brady camp. And I don't know if they're speaking for Tom as much, if Tom has kind of, you know, time kind of heals wounds. A seventh Super Bowl ring can heal a wound, too. I don't know if that's the case, or if they're really kind of saying how Tom really feels. But you heard afterwards, which is very un-Belichick-like, after the game, goes to the Tampa, you know, he goes to the winning locker room, the team that beat him, meets with Brady for 23 minutes.
Wow.
And Jose, I'm wondering, what do you think that conversation was, hashing things out? Do you think it was just an appreciation kind of thing? Were they just kind of reminiscing? How do you think that conversation, we don't know it, but what do you think they were talking about?
I mean, I'm thinking these guys probably were far apart for a little while, right? Like, you know, like you have a relationship that long, it doesn't end as well as you wanted it to. There is some animosity, right? It kind of showed that. And again, all the stuff you were just talking about. And that was really the first time we've heard of us. We've heard of that. I'll say like that. And I just think you're right. It was the first time they were probably in, you know, probably not the first time they were in the same room or whatever together, but it was probably the first time they had the ability to kind of speak one-on-one. You know what I mean? And without people around, without the dad around, without agents, without the wife, like, you know, all of that good stuff. And they probably just sat down and was just like you said, hashing things out. Hopefully that's what it was. Because again, like, and then what Belichick says about Brady, it's not like he comes out in the media and like he's shitting all over him. No, he's like, he's a great quarterback and we did a lot of great things together. So I would hope that they kind of squashed everything in that little meeting. 23 minutes is a long conversation.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot can be said at that time, but hopefully that's what it was.
You know, because it's interesting because, you know, you're so right that they were perfect together because they're so focused, so detail driven. They both have big chips on their shoulder. And I never seen anyone, I think, in sports that I can think of who really, when they say it one game at a time, one play at a time, these two guys as a coach, they personify it. Where I'm, you know, looking at that Falcon Super Bowl, and that's why I'm looking and I'm like, no, they really are one play at a time.
Yeah.
They're not going and trying to, which it's human, right? When things are going, your mind's going a million places. You're thinking, I got to do this, got to do that. You're overcompensating. I got to do my job and his job. You saw those two guys one play at a time. They're not getting ahead of themselves. And they did that for 20 years consecutively. Like, it was unbelievable. But then the personality differences as well.
Yeah.
Where I heard something last week. It's in Seth Wickersham's book, It's Better to Be Feared, which is coming out next week on the Patriot Dynasty. And he talked about that Belichick did this study about these great athletes, like what do they have in common, what sets them apart. And it was about like Jordan, Kobe, Tiger, and one on Tom Brady. And with the other, you know, Jordan, Kobe, and Tiger, it was, we want to destroy you. We want to just step on your throat. We just want to win at all cost. And the study showed that Brady had some of that, but where Brady thrives is he wants that family feel, that loving, supportive, everyone pumping you up kind of thing. That's what the atmosphere he thrives in, and that wasn't Belichick. And I think that's where it was interesting, where I think Tom Brady, after what they were reporting, I don't know what's, but like, yeah, you know, after a while, especially after that fifth Super Bowl where they come back and they beat the Falcons, he was like, you don't have to talk to me like the young 20-something-year-old back in 02, 03. Like, hey. Like,
which makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Yeah, it makes sense. And again, the length of this relationship, stuff has to change. And Brady, how great, at that point, how great of a player he was, already a Hall of Famer. You know, I can definitely understand where he was coming from. You know, you're going to want that equal respect at this point. You know, like, we've done this together. Like, I feel as though you should not talk to me like if I was 23, 24 years old and still not, I don't know what to do. Like, I know what to do. I know this playbook like the back of my hand, and, you know, I can coach this playbook probably. And he is a coach too. Like, he's a coach on the field too, and, you know, coaching that offense up. So it's again, like, for me, you talked about human nature. It's human nature in a relationship that lasts that long to have those bumps in the road. And again, the towards the end of that dynasty, they were starting to, you know, lose some games that they normally didn't lose. And, you know, just all of that stuff combined, I can see where the friction started.
And for me, I go back to a couple of things, couple documentaries. And the one that I remember that stuck out when I was listening to everything last week and, you know, thinking about our show is the 30 for 30 on the two Bills.
Yeah, it's a great one.
And I know you love that one. I love it. And I thought it was great because a lot of people, I feel like, have forgotten Parcells.
Yeah,
and how
I agree.
His impact and how people are like, well, Belichick surpassed him and blah, blah. It's like, no, Parcells, you taught Belichick a lot. And there's still a lot of things, in my opinion, that Parcells is better than Belichick at, as far like drafting players,
yeah,
you know, motivational. And that's the one thing I look at, which is like, we've talked about it, you know, Parcells, when he had a guy like LT, that's a special talent, he didn't treat him the same as the low guy on the bench. And LT knew, like, hey, this guy has my back. He pushed him too. He knew how to button push, right, how to motivate.
Yeah, it was not all the time, but he knew exactly when to do it.
And to me, I'm like, is that the difference? Would Belichick, would Parcells know, all right, once you have a guy like a Brady who's in a special class and he's your quarterback, that, yeah, you have to check, you can't treat him, you know, you'd be hard on him. You still want to coach him. That's your job. And that's what you have to do to keep that pressure on. But it's different. You know what I mean? I look at like some of the other relationships, and I'm wondering, is that where Belichick kind of missed the mark on realizing that this guy is special, and you got to treat special people special sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, like how you treat me. Like, so no, but you're exactly right. You got to know that line where it's like, all right, he can kind of get away with that, and I got to get off his back a little bit. Or how Parcells used to do it. LT did something, he ripped somebody in front of him, like, you got to get your head out of your ass. Like, stuff like that. And LT knew he was talking to him, but he knows he's not going to directly say that stuff to him, which I think is like a genius way to approach it.
Yeah.
But, and even like Prince, like with the press conferences, like Parcells, how totally different and how he used to manipulate that media, and he knew how to work that media. We all know Bill Belichick is, that's not his favorite part. And, you know, he's going to shut everything down real quick, keep everything close to the vest and not try to give too much information. And I think that attribute, that part there also can attribute to what you're talking about. And like the relationship, like dealing with relationships, maybe he does. He's not as good as some of these other coaches, but, you know, Belichick is that like mad scientist type that you can lock him in a room and he's going to be okay, and he's mm-hmm. going to come out with a game plan that's going to shut everything down.
No, and it's just so huge to see that dynamic, because you talk, you know, look at like great players, great coaches in different sports. You know, I remember reading Phil Jackson saying something about MJ. He was like, "Everyone's always asking Michael for something. I'm never going to ask him for anything, because as soon as I do that, I can't coach him anymore."
Yeah, you lost him.
You know, and I thought that was so huge, like, and especially the jobs that we do, and like, you know, from counselors and just different things like that in all fields. It's like, yeah, when you do that, you do lose that power, you know, like not power, but that leverage. Like, how, hey, you just asked me for an autograph for your kid here. Now you're trying to like yell, like, and so like there has to be that, there's a dynamic there. But, you know, I'm looking at it from MJ and Phil Jackson, Greg Popovich and Tim Duncan. You know, Tim Duncan said it, Popovich said it. He's like, because I could be hard on Tim Duncan, everyone fell in line, which is true, and I get that. And everyone said that about who played for the Patriots. He yelled at Tom, called Tom a moron and stuff like that. So we were like, we can't get out of line. So I kind of understand it, but then you also saw how these coaches praised these guys, and Brady never got that praise from he never felt that he did. Now, you hear Belichick in meetings with other coaches would say, Tom is great. That's not saying it to Tom.
Yeah, and you got to. You know, I don't care. And I get that tactic as well, right? Like, as a coach, like, you just, you know, you don't want to praise too much, because then these guys start feeling themselves and things like that. And what that can also do is make a player continue to push himself to kind of to show you, right? Like, oh, no, I'm great. Like, you're going to see. And it's like you're always looking. And you talked about earlier how Brady loves that, like, family atmosphere and all that. So I'm sure that probably did do something to him. I mean, and again, as great as he was, you do still want to, like, hear that praise. I don't care who you are. I don't care who you are. And, you know, you're right. Even the praise that he did give Belichick, meaning to about Brady, it was in a Belichick way. It was just like he's playing great. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure there was times after Super Bowl wins and stuff where he really, like, kind of talked well about him, and rightfully so. But, yeah, no, like, some coaches really come out there and – I remember you mentioned Tony Dungy. I remember Tony Dungy talking about Peyton Manning after one game. I can't remember. I think it was after the AFC Championship game when he beat New England. And it was like, he was like, man, he's playing great. He, you know, whatever he said. And it was just, that's what you want to see, man. Like, as a player, that's what you want to hear. But it's always two sides of that. And I can understand both.
Well, and I think, because you could say, like, well, why did Brady stay? And I think he saw, like, the greatness of Belichick and how important that was. But something that we don't talk about a lot, we do, but we don't, is the importance of that owner.
And yeah, big time.
Robert Kraft kind of gave Tom, you know, looking at how he dealt with both, he gave Tom Brady that family feel. So Brady could go to Kraft, which some people say kind of didn't help the situation in a way, but you kind of get it. Robert Kraft's trying to keep the Beatles together, trying to keep the band together. Don't want to break up. But Robert Kraft kind of took Brady in like a son, and that kind of is where that family feel did come from, and which I think was huge in helping Tom stick around, even as the success continued, but he wasn't getting that love from Bill that he maybe thought he should have gotten. How important ownership is, I think we just see, like, they write the checks.
Yeah.
And we see them when they meddle and it gets annoying, but just what a great owner does, to me, like, you don't see it. It's behind the scenes, and Robert Kraft did that. And he let Bill Belichick think outside the box and do his own thing and really, you know, run the program the way he wanted to. You know, Art Modell, when Belichick was in Cleveland, didn't do that.
Yeah.
And we saw the results of that. But Robert Kraft did do that, and Robert Kraft let Tom Brady get that family feel and was able to, hey, come on over to the house if you're feeling, you know, maybe frustrated with the team or with Bill or some decisions. Brady could come over and talk to Kraft, and that was huge.
No, that's definitely huge. He was always that bridge there, or that buffer, like, between the two of them. And you're right. Like, for me, in my perspective, I think he did keep Brady there for a lot of those years, you know, especially towards the end there.
Yeah.
When you would hear things about Brady maybe, you know, leaving New England or going somewhere else. Because, again, even – and it was also reciprocated, too, with Brady, like, signing those contracts that allowed them to sign other players.
Right,
you know, he could have went and got, obviously, big bucks, like, you know, the biggest contracts out of all those quarterbacks, and because he deserved it, but he wouldn't do that. And I don't know. For me, I think that's a part of that loyalty. Like, all right, like this guy's always looking out for me. I'm going to try to do the same way and in my own way, you know. And it definitely worked out for New England because it because the one thing, and we all hear it all the time, like once these quarterbacks get those huge contracts, it's hard for the team to stay together and to build a team. You better start building in the draft and things like that. And what Brady allowed them to do was give them a good contract, but also be allowed to sign other players like, you know, Randy Moss and Revis and all those guys that came in afterwards. And, you know, I think, again, that goes to that owner-player relationship, which was an amazing relationship.
Well, and you're right, too, because you kind of, you know, that Jimmy G thing, that was clearly Robert Kraft stopping that and saying, no, we're keeping Tom Brady, because Belichick was ready to go with Jimmy Garoppolo. And Robert Kraft intervened and was like, no, Tom wants to stay here. He's earned it. And Robert Kraft was right because they got another Super Bowl from it.
Right. No, exactly. And that's probably one of the first times that I can remember hearing him like doing player personnel type of stuff, like out in the media, you know. And you got, you know, Jerry Jones, owners like that who are all in the draft rooms and, you know, making selections and things like that. Like, you never heard that. You never heard about that with Robert Kraft. And again, and he can probably be one of the owners that had the clout to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And again, I give him a lot of respect as well because he let, and you mentioned it, he let Belichick and his team do whatever they had to do, and obviously worked out.
No, it's really a three-man dynamic with, you know, Brady, Belichick, Kraft. And you look at it back in the 80s with the Niners, great as Bill Walsh was, Joe Montana, Rice, a lot of those players say it, and it took way too long. Eddie DeBartolo got into the Hall of Fame.
Way too long.
Way too long. But how important he was to making those players feel like family, making them feel like, hey, we're treated first class, and that allowed Bill Walsh to do what he needed to do. You know, we know how it ended with Jimmy and Jerry. Jimmy Johnson, who would have taken that college coach like that, A, and then B, Jimmy did things the league wasn't seeing at the time.
Yeah.
All those trades and trading Herschel Walker and doing these things like that, very unconventional stuff that a longtime owner probably be like, you know, we're not doing this. So we look down upon like how important an owner is. And even like I said, that they needed each other, you know, whether you look at it.
Exactly.
Kraft and, you know, Belichick needs a Robert Kraft. Jimmy needed a Jerry Jones. Bill Walsh needed Eddie DeBartolo. And these owner relationships, that is such a huge difference, you know, and how these things can stay together and how an owner keeps everyone happy because they are the number one guy in charge. So is it putting ego aside and realizing, hey, I may not understand what you're doing, but I'm going to let you do you. Now, if it doesn't work, it's on you, but you're going to have that chance to do it your way. A lot of people don't get that chance in the NFL.
No, and like you look at the Rooneys in Pittsburgh, right? Yeah. Like that's another one who I look at. You know, you see how many coaches Pittsburgh has had in the past 30 years. It's probably like, I think, two or three, you know. And that's and another thing, what you talked about, owners not meddling too much. Also having patience, you know what I mean, and letting things kind of develop and play out. And, you know, just because a coach goes 5-11 doesn't mean he's got to go. You know what I'm saying? If he has a plan and a vision, you just let him see that out, draft well, and keep moving. But, you know, the owners, the teams that are getting trouble is with the owners come in and start trying to make player personnel moves. And because the owners are, I don't want to say they're fans, but they're listening to fans. You know what I'm saying? They're listening to sports media and sports radio. You know, coaches, they say they don't. I'm sure they do, but not as much as an owner, right?
Right.
Or as players. And that's where you're in trouble. You know what I'm saying? We're seeing that here in Philly when the owner thinks he's a football guy now. You're not a football guy. Like, stay away. Make the checks. Get out of the way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's something Robert Kraft did perfectly.
You know, and I look at it, don't get me wrong, like I said, it was fun last week hearing all the hype. I look also at, like, The Last Dance, and we've talked about it many times on this podcast, but, Jose, do we, and I get why, you know, it sells, you know, you get ratings, it gets interest, you know, we look at the negative, but I'm looking at from The Last Dance, I'm looking at what happened with the Patriots and how people were talking, like, last week. Do you think we focus on the negative too much here when it comes to these great teams?
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
You know, absolutely. And it's either, you know, the hometown, wherever they're from, you know, loves this team and the rest of the country hates them. You know, and I know I can fall into that too. And a really successful team, it's just like you just get tired of seeing them, right? Like you want to see something different, and that's where the evil empire thing comes out. And you know, you just it's you. I think it's human nature as well, right? Human nature is coming up a lot in this conversation, but it's just the truth. Like you know, you just get tired of seeing the same teams over and over and over and over again. But then after a while, for me, it's like, man, this team is great,
right?
And I love watching greatness. You know, I just think a lot of people just don't, and they just get tired of it, and they just want to move on with another team.
But I get that in the moment, right? But like Brady and Belichick are done. This is the second season they're not together. The Last Dance has been, at the time, 22, now 23 years done. So I get in the moment, you're tired of a team. I'm the same way. Like, all right, yeah. I'll get somebody else winning here. But I'm surprised when we do these reflective things. You know, my whole time, remember like the 90s and 2000s, it wasn't look at what Jimmy and Jerry did together. It was just, can you believe they split? They split. They split. And kind of like with Jimmy going to the Hall of Fame, I'm starting to hear like, look what they did together. They changed NFL history. The Last Dance, and we talked about it, they just slammed Jerry Krause like that. And don't get me wrong, Jerry Krause had flaws. I'm not saying he was perfect at all, but I think all of them had flaws, whether you look at from ownership especially.
All of them.
You know, Phil had his flaws. MJ and the team had their flaws too. But you watch The Last Dance, Jerry Krause is a villain at the end. He made some great moves though too, but he's a villain. And it's like, yeah, he made mistakes, don't get me wrong. But look at the moves he's made to give you the greatest dynasty, maybe besides the Celtics in the 60s, the NBA has ever seen with those 6 and 8 years. And besides, he came the end of MJ's rookie season, he made moves out the wazoo. I mean, you wouldn't have Phil Jackson, you wouldn't have Scottie, the things he was doing, and he did it again for another three-peat, and that got just like, oh, he made some great moves, but he's fat, and he's this, and he's that, and I'm like, we're not talking about the great things people are doing, too.
Yeah, it's always, Jerry Krause always comes up in these conversations. I don't know why, but.
Because he.
And you get fired up, too.
I do, man. You know why I do? I'm going to be real. Because that could be anybody.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
That could be me. That could be you. That could be, you know, producer Vince. Like.
Vince.
You're in the spotlight, and because the way you look, because you may have some chip on your shoulder, you have an edge because people doubted you. People say you didn't belong. You make mistakes, but then you do all these great things. You don't kiss ass and play politics, and your legacy is getting destroyed here, even after you're gone. And now he's not here to defend himself.
And now it's an easy target.
It is an easy target. And the fact that he went those last 14 years, no one even hear anything about Jerry Krause. And he should be talked about so much of what he did. And to me, that's the thing. And like, it's part of what we do here. It's how easily history can be altered and misremembered and getting all jumbled up and not laying out like, wait a minute, perspective's everything. Yes, there's mistakes, but when you have 6 championships, when you do something historic that you can't write the history of a league without mentioning this person's name, and not only do we not mention your name, we bury your name, you got problems. And that can happen to anybody.
Love it. I'm loving it. No, but you're 100% right. 100% right. And then looking at this New England team, even when I was getting ready for this show, I had to take a step back, right? I was sitting down, and I was like, man, this team was so great. Like, it just hit me like a ton of bricks, man. Because even from, you know, the evolution of the team, and you mentioned it earlier, how, like, styles and schemes were different. It was just from, you know, that 0-1 season or that 0-1 Super Bowl, you know, to the evolution of, like, this 2018 Super Bowl. And it was just like they were one type of team that first, let's say, 3 Super Bowls. And then that's when Brady became Brady. And then they were this juggernaut offense. So defense, you know, in some of them years, and then it shifted right back to Brady's still good, but this defense is the backbone of the team. And it's just, for me, it wasn't one way, and I think that's greatness right there. Like, the ability to shift per your talent and then still dominate and win. That, to me, that's greatness personified.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying. It connects. That's why I look at it, and you say the Jerry Krause thing, and it goes together. Like, if Belichick doesn't win with Mac Jones here, right, and the next few seasons they're not making the playoffs and Belichick retires, he steps down, I can easily see it. Yeah, he won. He's great, but he had Brady.
Yeah.
He had Brady. And to me, that's totally wrong because, like you just said, the different – don't get me wrong. Yes, he had Brady, and that's huge. Don't take that away. But the different teams, the different styles of football, the innovation, the reclamation projects, we say it now. History is different. Like, that's why we do this. Oh, he had Randy Moss. That's why they had those years. What they – no one wanted Randy Moss.
Nope.
People thought he was a troublemaker. He was done. Look what he did in Oakland. Yeah, all those things.
He was done.
Yeah.
Leaving the Raiders, he was done.
He almost got cut. People were saying you should cut him because he hurt his hamstring in the preseason.
Right.
So it wasn't – now it's like, of course, you had Randy Moss. Like, that's how it gets tripped up so quickly. No, no, no. That wasn't looked at like – the Patriots going into 07 weren't like the odds-on favorites. Everyone's thinking they're going to do it. No, no one gave a damn that they got Wes Welker.
Yeah.
The bigger signing was Dante Stallworth in the offseason over Wes Welker. No one knew. People were like, oh, that little white guy on Miami? Oh, yeah. Why'd they give up draft picks for him? What? Now it's like Wes Welker's great.
Yeah,
like,
he had 112 catches.
Yeah, now it's totally different. No, I remember no one knew who Wes Welker was. No one cared.
Yeah.
No one saw, was like, oh, Patriots are the favorite. No, no one thought anything like that. And it gets tripped up like he did these reclamation projects, you know? The team, the first, like you said, the first three. It's funny because we had the 20 years, you know, was that almost a month ago?
Yeah.
9/11. And it kind of was like, wow, you can kind of connect like that 20 years how the country's gone to 20 years how the Patriots have gone. Where when they, you know, they won it right after that Super Bowl, right after, and they were like America's sweethearts. You know?
They were. A lot of people forget about that. A lot of people were focusing on New York, rightfully so,
right?
On the Giants and the Jets. And then, obviously, you know, the baseball came and all that. But, you know, with the Patriots, and people were loving that too, man. Especially when they came out in the Super
Bowl
as a team with the flag. It was over with, man. Like, they were – America loved the Patriots, especially going up against the greatest show on turf. A lot of people root for them underdogs. They were definitely underdogs.
Yeah, people loved that squad. And you saw Brady was – he's a six-round draft pick. He's that underdog. He's like a Rudy.
Yeah.
Now we don't see him like that.
Rudy, yes.
But that's what he was looking at. Yeah, he's America's sweetheart. And can you believe this young guy, like – he's a backup at Michigan, and now he's in here winning a Super Bowl like this? It's crazy.
So kind of to go off, not to jump in, but kind of to go off of what you were talking about, it's like, yeah, these guys had Randy Moss and all these other great players. And, man, if you look at that offense, those first couple Super Bowls, it was the total opposite of that. You know, you're looking at Troy Brown as your best receiver. You know, Troy Brown was okay. He wasn't Randy Moss.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he wasn't even Dante Stallworth at the time. So it's... what they did with that offense, more importantly, what Belichick did with that defense is the reason why they won those early Super Bowls. And I understand, like, if you're a younger listener and you look at Brady now and you see everything that he's doing, I get it. You know what I'm saying? But go back and look at those 01, that 01 championship, the 2003 championship. And then again, I think the 04, that's when Brady, boom, kind of like blew up and was like Tom Brady, like Tom, TB12, right? But those early Super Bowl teams... we're not that.
No. JR12, TB12. You get it.
I'm trying, man.
But it's
hard work.
Yeah, it is. It is. And hey, it's hard work for them because those teams are different than the 07 team. Then you got, hey, they went to the two tight ends. Now it's like, oh, yeah, two tight ends. That was innovative.
That was.
Gronk and Aaron Hernandez. Like, and how, you know, that was changing. And that was a little run.
That changed the league for a little while.
Oh, yeah. Had them shook. And then we go to what happened later on with those guys. And this last run here with different, you know, they have helped to start the trend of getting rid of the fullback.
Yep.
And then in that last Super Bowl run, they're helping to bring the fullback back into play.
Yeah, it's nuts, man. Like, the innovation. And I wouldn't say just Belichick, right? Like, he had some – and you look at all those coaches that came out of that tree. And I know we always want to talk about that. We look at – you know, Andy Reid's tree, we always try to compare it to Belichick, and it's like he had some really good assistants. Yes, they didn't pan out as head coaches, some of them, but they were still really good assistants. And then working together, man, like that was a good coaching staff throughout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had the Romeo good Cornells, point. And, you know, like it was just so many. I can name like five or six coaches that I'm like, man, like to have all of those guys on the staff. Like, that's a really, really good coaching staff.
Yeah, we forget. Charlie Weiss was the first coordinator. Then you go to the McDaniels and then Bill O'Brien, and McDaniels comes back.
Yeah, he was scared to leave Brady. But that's whatever.
You know, and deep, like you said, Romeo Crennel, and we see look what Brian Flores is doing.
Great coach
in Miami. It's a lot of
Patricia. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many names that come out of that.
Patricia.
Well, yeah. I know, but when he came out, he was a hot.
He's the one I'm like, oh, you keep.
I get it too, but he got a head coaching job.
He did.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and again, like, and you look at those type of coaches, and you're like, oh man, these guys. And you heard it all the time. Without Belichick, these coaches are not good coaches. And I mean, it did kind of pan out that way. But when you're around one of the greatest head coaches of all time, he's going to make you look good. So
no, I think Belichick doesn't have what Parcells had, where I think Parcells taught them how to be big picture guys. I don't think Belichick has taught them. So I think they come into a place and try to do Foxborough 2.0.
Yep.
And not being like, hey, you gotta be big picture. You gotta be your own person. I think Parcells did that well with his staff. I think Andy Reid, the guys who have great coaching trees, Bill Walsh, they did that, which is they looked at the big picture.
Yeah, Mike Holmgren, like all those guys. Yeah.
So it's you know, it's just very it's different here. So that's why it's fun to have these conversations, but I think it's important that we're having them. And I think it's important that we do it on this show because it gets misremembered so quickly. Like you said, the Patriots were the evil empire for the past 14 years. They were America's darlings at one point.
Yeah.
They were all that. And people don't think about that, talk about that at all. And, you know, it's like that. I'm going to butcher that Dark Knight quote, you know. You're the hero long enough to become the villain.
Yeah, I love that quote, and I can never remember.
Yeah, I'm always like, yeah. But that's, hey, I went for it. But, yeah.
You got it, though.
It's the truth. You're the hero long enough, and then become that villain. And that's, to me, that's the shame. Where I think it's wrong that if Belichick, he's got to go so deep with Mac Jones to like show his legacy, to prove his legacy. He does it, but I think that's going to be the narrative.
Yeah, it's going to be. And it's already the narrative. It's that simple, especially looking at these past like week and a half. Soon as that Sunday night football or that Monday night the Sunday night football game was over with, it was all about Tampa and New England. And you started hearing that right away. And look, man, I see it because it's an easy way to go, right? You see Tom Brady goes to the Bucs, who are a very good team. Even without Tom Brady, they were a very good team. So then I was thinking, man, like, if you were to flip-flop those teams, right, you give Bill Belichick that Tampa Bay team without Brady, he's going to come close to winning the Super Bowl with that team. I don't know who's the quarterback, depending on the quarterback, obviously, but with that defense, those wide receivers.
I agree with that.
You know what I mean? I feel like he would come close to that. But with Tom Brady, obviously, like, you know, he did what he was supposed to do. And again, I think that's a really, really good Bucs team, especially last year in that defense. But, you know, I'm glad we did this show, right? I'm glad we made the pivot to do this show because it was really bothering me, that narrative, painting them two against each other and thinking Belichick really didn't have much to do with this dynasty, especially, again, and we'll get into these teams. If you look at these first couple championships, I think it was all Belichick.
Mm. It's interesting. Interesting point. So let's get into it because there's always that thing, and it's a debate, and it still goes on in other sports too, but definitely with, you know, certain this 07 Patriot team. Can you be not just the best team of the dynasty, but one of the best teams ever? Can you be a top 10 NFL team and you didn't win the Super Bowl? You didn't get the championship? Like, is that an oxymoron? Like, are you allowed to, like, is a list correct in your mind if, hey, you have a team up here that's really high up over other teams that did get the job done technically, but you got this team that didn't win and they're way higher. Or in the top 10 in some case. A lot of places you'll see 07 Patriots in that top 10.
This is the only team I would say yes. And I mean, this was the best team I've ever seen. And we've mentioned a lot of great teams, you know, throughout these shows, right? Check the archives. And,
check them.
You know, we talked about those 90s Cowboys, how great they were. Those 90 Bills. We talked about how great they were.
Jose's favorite team, those Bills.
Those late 80s 49ers, early 90s 49ers. That 91 Washington Redskins championship team. You know, we can go on and on. We've talked about a lot of great teams. I've never seen a team do what this 2007 Patriots team did in the NFL, you know, and I'll just rattle off a few things because you know how I'm all about these numbers. But, you know, they were plus 315 point differential for the year, which is the highest ever of all time. They won 10 games by 21 points.
Mm-hmm.
That's like Alabama type shit. Like, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? Like, they with two victories of 45 points or more. That's insane, dude. Like, and again, you talked about they had eight Pro Bowlers. You know, they scored 589 points, was at that point in time was a record until like that 2013 Broncos team, you know, beat that. But what this team was doing, I have never seen it before, and I haven't seen this since. And it's not like, again, I just talked about, like, you know, the 20-point wins and things like that. But they were trying to kill teams. You know what I mean? They were up 20, and still Randy Moss was catching 50-yard bombs. Like, the stuff him and Brady were doing that season, again, I've never seen that before. I was too young for Montana and Rice. You know, I've seen a lot of great combinations. But what they were doing, man, like, it was maybe the greatest receiver I've ever seen. You know what I mean? Like, physically gift, like, you know, him and T.O. were up there. And then the greatest quarterback I've ever saw. And it was just, they were just playing with the NFL. You know, obviously we all know Randy Moss, 23 receiving touchdowns. He breaks a record there. Brady puts up 50 touchdowns. It was just...
A record at the time.
You know, again, we talked about Wes Welker, 112 catches. So not only you have Randy Moss going deep on anybody, now you have Welker in the middle kind of just doing all his stuff. It was just an amazing run that season. And yes, I understand they did not win the Super Bowl, but what they did, I've never seen before.
Well, it's also interesting because I look at, you know, the AFC East, and that's a knock that people would say against the Patriots was they were in a weak division for this dynasty. And it was a terrible division.
For a long time.
For a very long time. But I say, you know what? Skip past the AFC East even. All right, AFC East wasn't that strong. You look at the playoffs that year, the Patriots beat in the regular season all these playoff teams. They beat the Colts, who were the 2 seed in the AFC that year. They beat the Chargers, killed the Chargers, who were the 3 seed.
Killed them.
They beat the Steelers, who were the 4 seed in the AFC. You look at in the NFC, the number 1 seed, the Cowboys, killed them. It was a close game for 3 quarters, but the Patriots pulled away. So that's now I'm counting 4 playoff teams. Week 17, they get the perfect season, beat the Giants, another playoff team. Earlier, a few weeks before, they beat the Redskins, who were another playoff team.
Did Baltimore go to playoffs that season?
No, Baltimore didn't go to playoffs that year.
Okay.
So, but you have...
But that's Ed Reed, Ray Lewis, Baltimore.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They had a down year, but they were constantly successful.
And constantly giving the Patriots tough times. And they gave them their toughest task, their closest loss in the regular season was that Ravens game. So... They did have – because the 72 Dolphins get knocked because if you look at their schedule that year, they beat everyone they played.
Right, right.
Great. Don't take away perfection, but it's one of, like, the easiest schedules in NFL history, what the 72 Dolphins had to go through. Now, I'm not knocking them. It's just what the numbers show. The Patriots beat playoff teams.
Yeah.
Not just playoff teams from the year before, teams that were in the postseason that year and destroyed them. You got to give it to him.
You got to give it to him. And again, I know at the end of the day, you got to win a championship. So even if we look at that Super Bowl, right, and it's not like they walked in there and got smoked. You know what I mean? Like, it was one of the best Super Bowls I've ever seen, right? Everybody was rooting for the Giants. I know I was. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it's the only time I ever did.
Exactly.
Oh, I made a deal with the devil.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, and it was hard.
It was hard. But I remember watching this game, and it's funny because I would have been okay if New England would have won the Super Bowl. Again, I wanted to see them go undefeated, but again, I didn't. You know what I mean? Like, and again, the Giants were the underdog. You know, they were coming in. They were coming against that New England juggernaut. And again, I wanted to see the Giants come out on top, and they did. But it took some miraculous plays for them to lose that game. You know what I mean? And they were still an interception drop away from winning that game. You know what I'm saying? So it's not like they went in there and got smoked. That was also my thinking with this team. It took a lot for them to lose, and it was like another perfect storm for the Giants, and that's exactly what happened in that Super Bowl. So for me, I can't knock this team. This is the best team I've ever seen.
It's interesting because, you know, I look back on it, and we have to say why. A big reason why, I think a lot of people would have wanted the Patriots to lose because they were just so dominant, but a big thing was, you know, Spygate started week one of that year. And that's, you know, Mangini, former assistant, and he says he didn't out Belichick, but he just said, will out you if you keep. I think he did too.
He did.
Even if he did what he said,
he looked like a snitch.
You still outed him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
he did look like. But you still did by, you brought it to the light. So then I'm like, you're still guilty then if you tell your management, hey,
I know something. I'm just not going to say it.
I won't say it. And then the management goes and report, like, they wouldn't have known it if you didn't say something, man, you know, man genius.
Yeah.
So that's where it came from. It started there. And then that's where, because they were, and things kind of came out then, but between Spygate and then a few years later, you know, you had Deflategate, they were really under the gun, the investigation. And it was not a pretty, it wasn't like the Jordan David Stern thing with the gambling '93 where.
Yeah, that got swept under the rug.
Yeah, it got hyped like it was serious, but it swept under the rug. This was really nasty. And it was bitter between Goodell and then the Patriots front office and Belichick, and people didn't know Belichick's coaching future would be kind of hurt by this. So then Belichick went on a fuck you mission to everyone in the NFL, and that's when you started seeing they were running scores up. They were taking it. So they weren't a likable team, and you know that's really where the evil empire stuff started. Because like Jose, you said earlier, those first three titles between 01 and 04, they didn't have that animosity. They didn't really have that hate. It came from Spygate in the beginning of 07, and it's lasted to this day with the Patriots, really.
Right, and rightfully so, I don't know. But again, what they did this season, they were rubbing it in the NFL's face in general, mm-hmm. right? Everyone involved with that. And I liked, and I was, it was cool to see, I'll be honest. Not a fan, but like as a fan of sports and a fan of football, it was just, again, like what this team did was unbelievable. And I've never seen a team up 20 something points in the fourth quarter and again just going and going and going and going like nonstop. Like they were trying to kill this whole league, and they did. That's exactly what they did. And this offense was great, this defense was really good, obviously you had the great coaching staff. This team was the most complete team that, again, I've ever seen. And you know, I was thinking earlier too, like, you know, we always talk about like a Kobe Bryant, right? And I always go back to like Afro Kobe, right? That's my favorite Kobe. Or, you know, we always think about like James Harden with the beard. Me, Tom Brady with the long hair was vicious. You know what I mean? Like Tom Brady with the hair showing out of the helmet was no joke. That Brady was no joke. And that was around this time and these couple years. So I always remember him from that, because when I see those highlights and I see the hair, I'm like, oh, man.
Well,
that was a bad boy.
I'm great. I'm glad you brought that up, because that was also a big thing is when I look at what this team did and I, you know, looking back on it, you know, after 06, obviously the Brady-Manning rivalry was already there. It was heightened.
Yeah.
When Manning gets that title finally in 06, he knocks off Brady in the AFC title game the year before.
That was a great game.
Great game. And there was always that debate of, well, you know, Brady is clutch, but he's not a big, he can't sling it out there like that. And Manning doesn't have a defense like Brady. He gets big numbers, you know, but Brady has the clutch. It was a back and forth, and I feel like the edge kind of was leaning toward Peyton, even with the championships with Brady. And then when Peyton got a title, I felt like going in 07, people were looking at Peyton as he's the best quarterback. I felt like what Tom did in 07, and in my opinion, and Peyton had great years in Denver after this and stuff, from 07 on, it was Brady is in charge of that rivalry. He's the lead dog. You know, I felt like the earlier years, it was kind of like you looked at Peyton more. I felt like Brady showed, you give him weapons, not only does he have the clutch factor, but he can put up numbers just like Peyton, just like some of the other all-time great quarterbacks. And he's not just a guy who's part of the team, or, you know, he's not a game manager.
Right.
He can sling it. And I felt from this 07 season on, Brady had that edge in that rivalry.
Yeah, because that was always the conversation, right? You know, Peyton was a better quarterback, just Brady had the better team. And then you look at that offense that Peyton Manning was on. We can rattle off all those Hall of Famers, Pro Bowlers, Harrison, James, you know, Reggie Wayne. The list goes on, right? Great offensive line. But this was the year that Tom Brady got some toys to throw to, too. And this is where I was like, all right, this guy's possibly the best quarterback of all time. Because that was the knock. Even like the 04 championship season, which, you know, we can get into. This was probably their best, like one of the best teams as well, this 04 championship. The wide receivers are Deion Branch, Troy Brown, and that's it. You know what I'm saying? Like, no tight ends. Offensive line was good, but he had nobody to throw to, and he was still doing all this stuff. And then when you finally give him those receivers and the man, like, he put up those crazy numbers. Even Moss, right? We talked about Moss, how he was on a down streak of his career. I thought he was done. He looked disengaged. He did not give a shit. Like, he was in Oakland barely running routes. But even his numbers, oh my God, man. Like, and again, that combination, it clicked so well, because everybody thinks, man, he was just a deep threat. He was catching bombs. He had 98 catches. Like, that's not just a deep threat. Mm-hmm. That's just, he was just open that much. 1,493 yards, and again, record 23 touchdowns. That's ridiculous, man. Like, that those, and again, it was touchdowns, but they were like wide open touchdowns. Like, the bombs he was, like, those deep passes he was catching, he was wide open. And that's just scheming. Man, I can't talk enough about this team, because it looked so easy. It looked like somebody was playing Madden against somebody who really didn't know how to play Madden. Yeah. And they were just lighting them up.
No, for sure. And you're right, because with the Randy Moss thing, don't get me wrong, you got to be a great athlete to get to that level. And when you see guys with great athleticism, yeah, you talk about that. But that's what it becomes. And it becomes just, he can just jump up and get it. And to me, you knew that if you're playing for Belichick in New England, you have to be a smart player.
Yeah.
Or you're not hitting the field. And Randy Moss, which I think, like, if you really watch, you knew he wasn't just a deep ball guy. That's the highlights. But what he's doing is impressive. He showed how great of a route runner he is, how smart he is just overall. He knew what was going on everywhere. And that was the key, where it's not like we got to worry about his jumping ability. It's the route running. It's the, hey, this guy puts himself in these situations, in these spaces that, like, how do we match up with it? Like you said, that's why. It's not like, oh, Randy, what we forgot about him. Is with that route running and the schemes, that's how the defenses are getting tripped up, and he's getting that wide open.
Yep.
That's a tribute to the schemes, you know, with, you know, Belichick and McDaniels, but also to the intelligence and the route running ability of Randy Moss as well. You know, like, you have to look at that. And I think that, to me, is what really, it kind of put that to bed, hopefully, that Randy Moss, was he a freakish athletic player? For sure. But he was so much more than that.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of gets, I hope it's starting to not be as talked about, like, just the jump balls. Look at how this guy ran routes. Look at how smart of a player he was.
Yeah, and the attention he drew as well. So what, he's drawing all this attention, double teams, safeties over the top. Now you got Welker running around in the middle, again, catching 112 passes. So it was pick your poison type of thing, and mostly Brady picked Moss. But for context, that 06 season, we were talking about him in Oakland. He had 42 catches for 553 yards.
Yeah.
Like, he almost did that in one game probably in 07, but that's the difference, right? Like, you come to an organization like New England, you leave an organization like the Raiders, who were a shit show. And don't get me wrong, he was playing a part in that too, because, you've seen it, like, interviews with Warren Sapp kind of talking about what Moss was doing there and really not pushing himself. There's videos of him barely running routes because he knew the ball wasn't coming his way. So you can knock him for that. I can do that, right? I can understand that. But when you come to a different organization like the New England Patriots, and they, you know, it's all about winning, it's all about execution, it's all about doing your job, then you saw the shift in him, and you saw the great football player come back. Because again, he wanted to win, and again, he was being coached, and it was just another perfect marriage, another perfect storm with Moss going to New England.
No, for sure. And it comes to that thing where I think we're both in agreement. I don't want to speak for you, but yeah, you could put this team in the top 10. That's fine. Most dominant team I've ever seen, for sure. I'm not going to call them the best Patriots team, though.
A lot of people don't.
I'm one of them. And that's what you get when you have, you know, 6 Super Bowl wins,
yeah,
9 appearances. So, like, you got a lot to choose from. All those championship games.
Countless, right? They're like 14 or
yeah,
something like that.
So, like, you have a lot to choose from, but I'm going to that 2004 team, which I think is a top 10 all-time team.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's not the most dominant. That's 07, but the best team is 04, in my opinion.
All right, talk to us. Talk to the listeners. Convince, because I think the 07 is the best one, but... Again, you're not the first person I've heard say this. But you need to come
because
back.
I say in 01, underdogs. 03, you know, 02, they missed the playoffs. 03, they start off, you know, Lawyer Malloy gets cut, all that, and they go on, they start 2-2, and they go on that run.
This was like the Patriot way start.
Right.
Yeah.
And I feel like after 03, when they beat the Panthers, Vinatieri hits the field goal again, now they have attention. Because 2 out of 3, okay. So then you go into 04, and now there's a target. Now people are starting, right. They're wondering, are you going to be a dynasty? Now you got 2 out of 3 here. And then you see the Patriots go on that run, you know, from they lost week 4 in 03 and don't wind up not losing again until, you know, Halloween in 04 to the Steelers here. So they have that record of 18, which has been broken by the Patriots from 06 to 08, but 18 consecutive regular season games. They still have the record, which is 21 in a row,
yep.
For when you combine playoff and regular season games. So 21 in a row. You have that pressure. Unlike in 07, like we said earlier, there's not that target on their back. When you're defending champs and now you have that win streak, people like that Patriot way's coming. Brady's getting attention. They're looking, you know, they brought Corey Dillon in.
Big time.
You know,
big time, time.
Having a great, he gets over 1,600 yards rushing that year. And without those receivers, but that defense is getting the name with McGinnis, Brewski.
That defense was nasty.
And they're getting that household name at this point.
So let me, real quick, can I read off the linebackers they had on this team?
Go ahead.
I didn't mean to jump
go
on
ahead,
you.
Go
you
ahead. Think?
You got Teddy Brewski, Roosevelt Colvin, who was a good player.
Very good player.
Very good player. You got Larry Izzo, who was a great special teams player. You got Ted Johnson, he was getting older. But you got Willie McGinnis, Roman Pfeiffer, and a young Mike Ravel. Damn, that linebacker core was stacked, man.
Insane. Insane. And that they go on this great, they wind up being 14-2 in the regular season. They do all this. Ty Law, Pro Bowler, now Hall of Famer, he winds up getting hurt in Halloween against the Steelers, breaking his foot, out for the season. Tyrone Poole was a decent cornerback.
He's decent, yeah.
He was already gone. So they do all this with their starting cornerbacks out. They wind up using Troy Brown.
Because even Asante Samuel was playing and he gets hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you like you said, Troy Brown,
a receiver, and he's been there playing DB and getting interceptions.
Got 3 that year.
So that's where it's impressive, where they're not even, you know, obviously injuries happening, but when you lose your starting, you know, cornerbacks, you're going to take a big hit. They kept right on rolling. I also look at it how they wound up finishing 14-2. They are 2-seed because Pittsburgh, that's Roethlisberger's first, you know, his first year.
Yeah.
They're 15-1. But then, unlike with the 07 team, after I think it was that Buffalo win, they start slipping. You know, we look at it. A.J. Feely and the Eagles, Sunday Night Football, almost beat the Patriots in 07 in Foxborough.
Right before that Giants game, right?
It was a few weeks before.
Yeah.
And the Eagles wind up being like 6-10 that year. McNabb's out. It's A.J. freaking Feely.
Yeah.
And they almost lose Sunday Night Football to that team. One of Andy Reid's best game plan up game is a loss, but
he
really
came in.
They got
a second round pick for A.J. Feely.
Yeah, they hustled.
Thank you, Miami.
They hustled big time. So you're looking at that. That Raven game, which a couple of fluky penalties, yep. You know, they should have lost that game on a Monday night game, I think. So they had that Monday night game with Baltimore. They should have lost that one. Bart Scott gets frustrated, throws the flag into the stands.
Yeah.
Because there was some – Rex Ryan does that timeout. Rex doesn't call that timeout. We're not even talking about the 07 Patriots. Let's be real. Then you go to Week 17, that Giants game, down to the wire. The Giants, they're showing that blueprint, you know.
Yeah.
They do it 0-1 Patriots on them where, hey, Patriots lose to the Rams in 0-1 in the close one, but they have the blueprint where we see them down the road. We got them. Week 17 – Patriots are in trouble. All the nations watching to see if this team can get 16-0.
They were playing their starters. They wanted that. They wanted
they
that
went
undefeated
for it.
Yep.
Because you're right. There was talks like, "Hey, do you rest them? Do you don't want to? You don't want to lose somebody. You don't want this to happen or that to happen. All that kind of stuff." And they get the win, but it's down to the wires, 38-35, and they were trailing going into the fourth here. So you're getting close games in the regular season. The playoff performances for 07, what happens as well? Tight one against, I think it was Jacksonville in the divisional.
Yeah.
Tight one there. Tight one against San Diego in a championship game. They're not blowing people out. And we know what happened to Super Bowl. Now, with the Patriots, we see in 04.
In 04, yeah.
We see what happens. Wind up just keep on cruising, crushing it. And those playoff matchups. Peyton got that year 49 touchdown. He's the one to finally break Marino's record. 49-04, the greatest offense we've ever seen. What he did against Kansas City the week before, they don't punt.
Yeah.
They don't punt. They just get all these points.
That Colts team is good. Offensively, they were good.
Yeah, and what happens when they go to Foxborough in 04? They put up 3 points.
Yep.
On the greatest QB, at that point, the greatest QB season ever. This offense with, like you said, so many future Hall of Famers on it, Pro Bowlers and all pro guys. No starting cornerbacks. 20-3. Then, hey, who stopped their streak? Pittsburgh did. So they got to go into Pittsburgh. Ray's got 103-degree fever the night before. Is he going to play? All that stuff. No worries. Okay, they smashed him 41-27.
Now let's talk about that game because they lost in week 8.
They lost to him in week, yeah.
And Joey Porter was talking a lot of shit.
Which Joey Porter always does.
Yeah.
He's annoying.
And he was talking that New England was not on their level. And, you know, Teddy Bruschi was interviewed and he was like, what have y'all done? Like, you know what I'm saying? But he was like, all right, we'll remember that. And they remembered.
They remembered and they wound up smashing him in that game. And that's why I look at the 07 Patriots. You could kind of even see it then. I know hindsight's 2020. You were seeing cracks in the armor after they clinched that division. I think it was like week 11 or week 12. You started seeing some cracks. Teams were blitzing them more. And you kind of saw, like, is this undefeated record putting some pressure on them? Where, to me, 04, they got stronger down the stretch. And even in that Super Bowl, you know, it was against our Eagles, 24-21 score. But really, it wasn't that close. They were in control. And that's where I look at it as the difference is they had a target on their back. That's the last team to repeat these guys.
Yep.
That's when they solidified that they're a dynasty. They wound up breaking records for consecutive victories, and they finished stronger down the stretch. And the 07 Patriots did not. And I'm not even just talking about the Super Bowl. You were seeing cracks for a while. And like I said, Jose brought it up earlier, that Ravens team did have Ray Lewis and Ed Reed, but they missed the playoff. They had a bad record that year. The Eagles with Andy Reid, great team throughout the decade, struggled in 07. Weren't one of those great years for the Eagles. They, you know, McNabb was out.
Yep.
So not against some of the great teams of that year, they were struggling, showing cracks in the armor. That's why I give it to 04, because it was just that dynamic team. Brady's emerging. They have a running back in Corey Dillon, and they have that defense really coming together. And it's just, hey, I look at how you finish, and they finished pretty damn good.
Yeah, they went 14-2, man. For me, any season that's 14-2, it's a great season. And they did that a couple times in this run, which is nuts, man. And even that, so that 04 team was the first one out of these Super Bowl teams that both offense and defense finished in the top 10. Because, again, we talked about it earlier, those first couple, it was mostly all defense. Brady was a game manager. He was making plays. He wasn't turning the ball over, and it was just more defense dominate, you know, field position, all that stuff. But this, like you said, like this team is the one that, you know, started turning things around for New England offensively as well. Now Brady's coming into his own. He's, you know, he's doing his thing. I'm trying to. I got his numbers up here. Where are we at? 04. I mean, they're not like mind blowing. Thinking of, like, you look at stats today, but. You know, he threw for almost 4,000 yards, 28 touchdowns. You know, so again, for Tom Brady at this point in his career, those are great numbers. And you talked about Corey Dillon. You know, there's so many, again, like, offensively, they were coming around. You know, they were starting to roll. And, you know, again, that defense was still great, even without the corners. We just talked about that front seven. We haven't even talked about Richard Seymour, who's a great defensive lineman.
Should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, so you have that as well. So, a lot of people give this 04 team that number one spot. And look, again, like, I'm not here to argue that. You know what I'm saying? Like, they are a great team. I just, for me, like, the dominance of that 07 season, I have to put that team ahead of it. But I had that team number two.
Well, I think that's the difference to me when people look at, hey, and it could be in any sport when, you know, you have those historic teams and they don't win, where do you rank them still? And I think that's the difference, which is they can still be high, especially if they do what the Patriot, which is historic on the stat sheet, historic and innovation. You know, you got to give it high. But if there's another team that maybe they didn't do as many historic things, but they're historic and they won.
Yeah.
That's where they have to go, you know.
Yeah, I get that.
07 Patriots could never be above in a ranking the 85 Bears to me. I couldn't, even though I think you see it, but 85 Bears were dominant, historic, and they got the job done. I will always, even though on my eyes will say I like this the Patriots better, they're more dominant overall, offensively and defensively. When I see a team that's historic and doing it, and hey, the Bears got their one in that regular season game against Miami, I'm going to always put 85 Bears over 07 Patriots on my list. Now you look at like 2017 Eagles or something. Hey, and that's what team. I'm not going to put them over the 07 Patriots. Yeah. You know, like I can't do that. So that's where the difference is, where I'm not going to put you over another historic team who did get the job done.
Right. No, I definitely understand that. Especially, again, like when you talk about all-time great teams, yeah, I can't put them ahead of like those 89, 49ers, those, you know, there's a couple of really like dominant, like those, any of those Cowboy teams in the 90s or early 90s, especially like that 92 season. Like that Cowboys team was legit. So yeah, I definitely get that. But, you know, again, I get that he win it, but this for me was the best team I've ever seen.
Yeah, and I think that's always the debate. Most dominant and best. It's definitely the most dominant team I've seen.
Yeah,
I wouldn't
ridiculous.
And the most dominant Patriot team, and the most dominant team in I've seen in you know, viewing go from the last 30 years, 25, 35. This is number one most dominant, but the best, I won't give them that title.
Yeah, and then like for me, like I had this another team, another championship team that well, the New England championship teams, that 2016 team to me like also was sneaky dominant as well. You know, they went 14-2 again. That's like a great record.
That's
again,
an unbelievable record.
You know, and these dudes are just pumping these 14-2 seasons out. But, you know, you talked about the Deflategate. You know, Brady misses the first month of the season. And this season for me, and I had this team. I don't, we want to rank them all? You want to do that or? All right, let me just talk about this team real quick. Like, to me, this was the third. I had these ranked third, right? So.
I'm with you. We flip-flop on 1 and 2, but third is the same.
So this season, for me, is almost like this whole like dynasty, like how this season played out. It was like they were one team that first month. They were riding LeGarrette Blount. He was the offensive player of the month for the AFC. They were running all over everybody, and then Brady comes back, right? And they're 3-1 when he comes back. So he missed the first four games, and then – they just dominated the league. I think their point differential was like 2 touchdowns. I think it was 14 points a game or 16 points, excuse me. And, you know, it was just when Brady came on, it was over with. And we talked about like rooting for New England and all that stuff. But in that Super Bowl, I had a funny feeling they were going to come back. You know, they were going to beat Atlanta. They were down 28-3.
Yeah.
And I remember I was watching this home by myself. And I was like, they scored that one touchdown, and I was like, these dudes are going to come back. Like,
I know. I want to say that because that I think that's going to be a future episode soon. I just five, so I do, but I could talk about that game all day. It's unbelievable. But
yeah, what they did in that game and how they stayed composed, and especially Brady, it's amazing, man. But what they did.
No, I think the 16 team is a really great team too. Not a top 10 team like the other two. But
I
think top 15, top 20, yeah, that which is impressive still.
Yeah,
you know, but they're a great team, you know, and I think Brady should have been MVP over Matt Ryan that year.
Yep.
And it showed in the Super Bowl. So I am with you, like, you know, you can't be upset, I feel, with either of those three if that's your number one choice. With 16, 07, 04, you can't really be upset. I can't be like, what, you're crazy if you pick one of those three. If you pick like 01 or something, I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. But one of those three, because they all were just Brady and Belichick at their best, just clicking.
Yeah, that was another great team, man. Again, you talked about Brady. He had 28 touchdowns and 2 picks, and he missed 4 games.
Yeah.
And he almost threw for 3,600 yards. So he was 11-1 that season.
No, I think it's you know, Brady's in that category of, you know, like Michael or Kobe with Tiger. You don't want to, you almost just want to kiss their butts all the time because you don't want them to be mad. When they're mad, it's just like, they're just destroying everybody. And, you know, you get a spy gate, you get a deflate gate, you suspend them. You know, they just want to tear it up. And Brady, he can have that too. I think he's everything showed that he likes the family feel, but I'm like, yo, you thrive pretty much in that, you know, screw you feel kind of thing too. Like you do well in that. I can't tell the difference because when you're pissed off, it's like, hi, all the women and children.
Well, you see the intensity, like,
yeah,
you know, especially just him coming out on the, you know, on the field and getting pumped up. Like, the intensity is always there. And again, I think it stems from that chip on the shoulder, like you talked about, being drafted, having all those quarterbacks being picked before him, before he got picked in the sixth round. It's like he walked into this league knowing that, you know what, like, I'm the underdog and I'm going to come out on top. And I give him all the credit, you know what I'm saying? Like, because he did exactly that. He busted his ass. He worked hard. And again, like we've been mentioning it, we've seen the development of Tom Brady, right? We've seen him from that first championship when he was, again, a game manager, and we look at this 07 season when he's breaking touchdown records, and then again, like, even like that 2018 Super Bowl where he knew that defense was a great defense, and he just had to kind of manage the game and kind of get stuff done. You had, you know, Gronk, who we thought was done in 2018. Like, you know, he's just getting there, and he still gets it done. It's just, he's an amazing player.
For sure. Now, did I convince you? Did I change your argument from the 07 Pate? You still thinking
about it? No, 07 for me.
Ah, I tried, Vince. I tried. But, you know, it's really kind of, like you said, I'm glad we kind of focused on this for this episode, because we really won't see this, I think, in professional sports. Like, I don't think we'll see anything like, now college had some, you know, the UConn women, and yeah, which I don't take away, that's amazing.
No, that's a great run.
But I just don't think we will see this with the era of free agency, with players just to do what these two men did. Well, three, because I'm going to give Robert Kraft. To do what these three guys did, it's unparalleled. And it's something that needs to be talked about and needs to be appreciated more. And I get it. You know, like I said, Seth Wickersham's book comes out, and that's what sells. You know, hearing the problem, especially with these guys who were so private and they kept everything so close to the vest. I get it. I do understand. And I'm interested in it, too. I got the book coming through Amazon. I'm ready to read it. So I understand. But I think for me, why I like sports so much is looking at these coaches, these players, executives, too, at times. And, yeah, they're human, just like all of us. So there's good, there's going to be bad, there's going to be screw-ups, right?
Yep.
But when you see someone doing something great, yeah, we can talk about the bad and where their struggles were, where their flaws were, but let's focus on those great things. You know, yeah. I learned more. You can look at, hey, what Jerry Krause or Phil Jackson, the things that they could have done better, but, and we've talked about it before we ever did a show, a lot of those lessons, those things that they've said about how they do their jobs, I approach to my job, I approach to my life on how to evaluate talent or how to communicate or connect with people. That one day, one play at a time, being in the moment, focusing on the details, that inspires me when I see Brady and Belichick doing it. And I don't have the book, you know, yet, so maybe the book is more positive than the negative. I don't know. I haven't read it. But whether it's the book or whether how we talk about it, let's focus on, hey, what makes these guys great? And you can't emulate it, you know, because there's only one of Brady, one Belichick.
Teams are trying, trust me, they're grabbing all these assistants.
Let's talk about what they do that's so great. How can we, you know, apply that in other sports? How can we apply that in jobs, in management? Hey, being one, you know what? They're different personalities, but they had that same goal and the same kind of mindset, that same determination to stick together for 20 freaking years. It's pretty amazing. I think that's why I love doing this show and talking about these teams, especially a team like this, is because I look at them and say, what did they do right? Not what went wrong. That's my first thing. What did they do right to keep that kind of success?
Yeah. And again, a lot of the credit we've given to Tom Brady, for sure, deservingly so. A lot of credit goes to Bill Belichick. You know, we talked about Robert Kraft. I just, you know, I look at Belichick, man, and there's a certain, like, you can be a great coach, right? You can coach up guys, you can draft guys, you can bring them along, develop them, they play well, great. But then there's also, for me, like, guys like we talked about Randy Moss, when, you know, nobody else wanted them, and you bring them in, and not only do they play well, they've reached that full potential, that Hall of Fame potential that everybody knows that they have. You bring in a Corey Dillon, nobody wanted Corey Dillon, right? And New England brings him in, he rushes for almost 1,700 yards. You know, it's just, you see stuff like that. Daryl Revis, he was done in Tampa. they bring him in, all pro. Like, he, it was just all those guys that you can constantly listen. Even the Teddy Bruschi's, like, all those guys, they came in New England, and they played above what they were supposed to play. And again, we all know how great Randy Moss is. Corey Dillon was a great player for a while there. But when they got to New England, something shifted. And I think that starts with Belichick, right? And then you got a Brady who is also, like, pushing that. But for me, it always starts with the coach. And I love Bill Belichick. I know a lot of people hate him. I love greatness. I love watching greatness. You know, when even against Tampa, he was putting the two linemen with, like, the five DBs. And, like, it's just, I love watching that stuff, man. And, again, going back to what we started the show with, that narrative that he needed Tom Brady, that's totally false. Because, again, if you don't believe us, just check those first couple Super Bowls, and you'll know exactly what we're talking about.
They needed each other. And we need to just say that for all these.
And that's okay.
For these duos or trio, these teams, you need each other. No one does it alone.
Nope.
So you need each other. So that's what needs to be said, which is, you know, we, even with Brady winning in Tampa, a lot of the stuff that he implemented and he learned was from New England.
Exactly.
He brought it there. They need each other. So, it's enough of who, you know, there's going to be wrong. Like I said, we can talk about things that they did wrong and we can learn from them, but let's look at what they did right. And this was a hell of an episode, man. I'm glad we got to do this.
Yeah, I love the pivot, you know what I'm saying? And I'm glad you were on board with it. And I'm glad we both were on board with it, you know what I mean? And I'm glad we did it. You know, I remember I was talking to somebody, they were like, you talking about Tom Brady? I'm like, yeah, TB12 is great, man.
Yeah.
Like, we're going
and,
to talk
and
about
we're not
that.
Just recapping, you know, we weren't just recapping the damn Bucks-Pats game. It's going into the legacy. We could, obviously, if you know our show, we can go deeper and longer, but we're not doing that. Because we, you know, we got plenty of more to talk with Brady later on for future episodes, Brady and Belichick. But
and I'll just say this: it kills me that he's a Michigan guy too.
It's great, it's great.
I
you know,
it.
I just love it, man. You know, between praising Brady and then we get to see, you know, I'm a Michigan guy. Jose's Ohio State, and we get to see his boy Urban Meyer and what he's been doing this.
Gotta respect the grind, baby.
Herb, oh, he really respected it all the way, Herb. You know, just the filthiness that's Ohio State. You know, just Woody Hayes scandal, Earl Bruce Tressel scandal, Herb, just Ohio State. Ugh, just
it's all right. We'll just keep winning.
It's just great that Brady's a Michigan guy. It's just it just fits, and it's beautiful.
But what he did in the NFL and is still doing, he's throwing for he broke Brees' record, 80,000 plus passing yards from a game manager. To throw for over 80,000 yards.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
And that's what Michigan men do. So for the one and only, even though he's an Ohio State Buckeye fan, Jose Ruiz.
Oof.
I'm Jeremy Dove. Thank you guys for listening to Bigger Than the Game. Take care.
Peace.